Hope my knee's all right.
Thank you. Be careful.
Glen Affric Partnership. So, good afternoon and welcome.
Good
afternoon. We've got your original submission, thank you very much, and your ecological assessment report, and your pre-circulated evidence, and then I see you've tabled something for today as well. Is that different? Is that to replace the pre-circulated evidence, is it, or is it?
It's to shorten up what we had, so we just wanted to identify shorter points, so we've put together some pictures for you so you can understand a little bit about where we're coming from.
No, that's great, thank you. Yeah. So you're happy just to lead us through the document?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we've got a copy over there, so.
We do.
Thanks again for the opportunity. I'm Mark, and my brother Paul's here, and this is my wife Louise, and Paul's wife. We all farm together on 904 hectares. That's a sheep and beef breeding and finishing operation in the Hokonui Hills. Altitude's 285 to 450 metres. We're great believers in treating our environment with respect, as it's our way of life, and have done so for many years. And our hope today is to highlight some of our concerns from our submission. Our environment and working with Environment Southland now, but it was catchment board, isn't something new. And this photo here is a picture of peat bog that we have in our farm, and it was fenced off and retired, and that came through and with the catchment board back in the 80s. So it's seen as a significant ecological water soaking up sort of piece of country that we've got there. There are other ones in the valley, they're not fenced off and they're grazed, so that one there, that's what we've done around that. Also at that time we were encouraged to broom fence, and we've had some of our property broom fenced. And had many discussions at that time about water quality, so it's nothing new for us. But interesting in those days, it was water quality in the headwaters, so that actually the freezing works could put more rubbish in it further downstream. So yeah, we weren't very impressed with that, but never mind, it's by the way. What we wanted to highlight today from the Land and Border Plan is Stock Exclusion Rule 70, Intensive Winter Grazing Rule 23, and Cultivation of Slopes Rule 25. We believe information is key, and it gives us power. So just starting with Rule 70, we agree with the sheep being excluded from that rule. But we strongly disagree with the implementation of this rule on extensively farmed properties. We have not seen any evidence that conclusively shows that complying with this rule will improve water quality. And my question is, where are the test results for our property? We've actually started doing that ourselves, testing it where it comes into our property and where it goes out. And we think that's a really simple way of working it out, and you'll be glad to know it was better when it went out than what it was when it came in. We believe one broad rule doesn't fit all properties, because we're all individuals, we all farm in different ways with different objectives. Our farm was developed out of native country, and this was done with three aspects in mind. It was fenced for natural water for stock, it was fenced for shelter from gullies for the stock, and it was fenced for ease of stock movement. Those were critical in the day. This map here shows you that if we were to have to fence off all our creeks, and these, so the yellow are the two main creeks, and that's the headwaters of the Otapiri, Schofield. The red are all the sub creeks, all the little creeks that run into that, and the green are ponds. So you can see it would be a massive job to re-fence, redesign, and also take into account that a lot of the fence lines that are running in places have got shallow belts and trees. It's not just like you pull the fence down and shift it to the creek. So we see this as being really expensive, and we actually believe it to be an unnecessary task. It would also force us to become more intensive in our operation to justify the huge expense. When we look at the costing, we're looking at Those two main creeks are 9 kilometres long to the back boundary, and then we'd have 20 plus kilometres of other fencing to be done. If we work that out at $15 a metre, you're coming out $435,000 for one site. So we're talking basically $1 million to do that. In addition to that, there'll be digger work, dozer cross and culverts. And we wonder, given, and admittedly we're in the early days of testing, but if our water going out is better than going in, then does that really need to happen on these extensive sort of properties? Next one, Louise. This gives us a bit of a look at the creeks. We talk about sediment that goes into the creek, but the reality is creeks are a mind of their own. We talk about sediment that runs off on a work paddock maybe, but back there you can see on the left hand side that creek is taking that out naturally itself. And we have to get in numerous places and put rocks in to hold that corner. So you'll see it's taking it out on the left, but it's actually depositing it on the right, and that's coming from further up. So it's not like it's totally lost, it's not like it's totally going right out. The picture on the right, it's a wee bit hard to see, but the what we've done off Google Maps is we've traced that main creek there and we've looked at the changes in it. So from 2003 to 2013, in places that shifted up to 15 metres. Okay, so we're talking about we're going to fence something off, and then we got risk, and it was already talked about of slumping, but we got risk of trying to control that creek. So that's just information really that hopefully will help you just understand just how difficult it is on these sorts of properties. These two examples, so this is standing in the same place looking up, okay, which has had no grazing through summer by sheep or cattle. From the same place looking down the creek is grazed. Now the reality is if that's all fenced off, it'll all end up looking like the left, and then we will need diggers to go in. We'll upset the aquatic life, and to be honest it would look far better, we believe, far better is what's happening on the right. Given that, our neighbours did this, and that's the risk, and we don't think that's suitable either.
That was sprayed.
That was sprayed, yeah. With fencing everything off, I said at the start, basically our place, we don't have troughs. We're all natural water, and we are sheep and beef. So we would be looking at another $300,000 to $500,000 to put a water scheme in, which again is a massive cost on top of all the fencing. And my question is, what do we receive for that? Who actually pays for that, and how does that affect our business? Especially given the fact that, and I admit it's only early days, but if the water going out is very similar to it going in, it seems totally unnecessary on our class of country. Rule 23, intensive winter grazing. We support the definition of intensive grazing as per S42A. We would like to see a percentage of the property to be used to decide how much winter grazing is allowed rather than a set amount. We believe on our class of country setback areas are really difficult to decide on due to the undulation. So some places it'll be very steep, others will be very flat. And we would also say by applying this rule, we'll actually need to cultivate more land, therefore more risk, to be able to feed our stock adequately. What we've done and what Dad did, and this is way before this plan came up, is we've got what we call sediment ponds, catchment ponds as strategic places, so that in the event of an event, and that's what we're really talking about, is when we get a downpour or we get snow and we get the melt, then we've got a place to be able to catch. And that's far better than fencing something off and letting it just run away down the creek. If it goes into a pond, it'll settle out. Interesting, we've just eaten that off, and I did watch it, and I noticed, because that right-hand photo, that top photo, is a natural sort of sway, and we did have heavy rain, and we did have cattle up in there, and I watched the water come into this pond, and you could see there was some sediment came in, but it settled down. You could see it under the water. It settled down in the water. So it was doing its job. Rule 25, cultivation on slopes. We just oppose this rule. This photo here, this block on the left, it shows you a paddock that's due to be worked up. Total area is 8.4 hectares. So that top right hand one is the area that we've worked up. If we take out the area around, so that we'd have to have a buffer zone, and then the steepness of slope, we would lose 2.64 hectares, which is 31% of that paddock we would not be allowed to cultivate. Not only that, practically if you look at it, so on that bottom right hand photo, the black is what we would be able to cultivate. So you see we've got a big piece down the middle that we wouldn't be allowed to cultivate under this rule. And then you've got to go across and do another bit. So it becomes very messy. And this is just one paddock of numerous paddocks that we would have this issue. If you look in that bottom photo, right down the point, Louise, can you point to it? There's a pond.
Oh, I'll do it.
So we've got a pond right there, okay? And this flows in there, and that'll flow in there. And then that goes down through filtration areas, and then it goes down into another area of filtration, and then it'll go out to the main creek. So we believe that, and it's only from here that it'll go that way. This here is steep, and it'll go down, and then this here's 500 metres to the road. So it just doesn't make sense from a farmer's point of view. Some of the, and I'll go with the rule, let's have practical rules that make sense. Currently we have cows in this block here. Okay, we've got two ponds here. And at the moment, it's as flat as your carpet. It's been beautiful because we chose to feed it late. Okay, so it comes down to how we manage that. So we're saying that we oppose this rule. If this rule is implemented, or did I say that? We'll need to cultivate more land to make up for the percentage lost. And that's talking about this 30% in that particular one. This will impact our carrying capacity and our overall profitability. We believe measuring slopes on our farms will be extremely difficult and even controversial, because trying to work out which way the slope goes and whether it should or shouldn't go, we would say it's far better to have, I guess, in this case, safety at the bottom. It's far more practical. We just want to touch on, because for all of these, we actually think the same results, the same things are probably needed. So for all these rules, we believe the best practical common sense approach to make progress is to have sediment ponds and have really good filtration areas. This is our place here, and you can see areas that have worked. You can see how much filtration there is before any water will get into the creek there. I think we've got another couple of those. You know, this is some more area, and you're asking us to fence this off so that nothing can get in there. To be fair, our animals do go in there. They get shelter from that. It's good for its ecosystem. You can imagine lambing and snow, they'll lamb in there. So if we fence all that off, we take away all that sort of risk. So what we're saying is that we believe sediment ponds, filtration areas, and sound management practice on our class of country are the most effective tools. We also think those sediment ponds need to be in strategic locations, and they need to be encouraged, and we would actually ask that we aren't consented for them. To get a consent to put a pond in to catch sediment just seems absolutely ludicrous. When we know our country, we're one with it. A bonus to this is that any sediment that's trapped can be cleaned out and put back on the land. So we can take it back out and actually put it back, and it's not lost. Secondly, we, along with like Sir George and others, would like to see our water be tested, and we've started doing that. So we think it should be tested to see if there's an issue on individual properties. I think at the moment we've just got a big picture thing, and we're hoping it'll suit everybody, but I don't believe that to be the case, and I think it needs to be individualised. I know that some people say that's a huge cost, but I would rather spend $2,000 on testing a year, or even five, than spend $1.5 million on stuff that doesn't need to have to happen, because that just devalues are probably in effect. So we believe that water testing coming into our property and leaving it is a really clear picture, and when it comes into our property, effectively that can be the going out for the other person on the top side, and the same at the other end, so it's not like a double, it can actually work really well together. And I'm a little bit like George, if we find we've got a problem, then we know we can sort it out. We can work out what that is. So I don't think there's been enough of that done, personally, to be able to make these sort of decisions. We would also like to suggest that maybe we have likes of like case managers or audit type people that understand the property. So, for instance, there's no point sending a person up to our place that's focused on dairying, because that doesn't work. We need a sheep and beef hill country person that understands the process, understands what we've got in place, and we can work with. So our question is, will all the proposed rules improve water quality? If not, in our case, it will put immense financial pressure on our business. In excess of 1.4 million, that's a huge cost, which merely decreases our productivity due to loss of grazable land and lack of cultivation of all land. And I just want to also suggest that one rule doesn't fit all. So I think it needs to be more tailor-made. I want to leave you with the story. Louis, you might be able to give these because they probably need some sugar by now. But I want to leave you with this little story, and it sort of sums up, I guess, in some ways, our frustration to a little point. But in 2005, I had a visit from an environmental compliance officer. He'd been flying around, checking on what was happening in the dairy farms, and he'd actually seen some pigs on our property and he wanted to go pick up. Nothing to do with really the environment. But I asked him, what did you find? And he said to me, well, it's not that great, he said. And so I said to him, what's Environment Southland's strategy going forward around the influx of the dairy farming in Southland? And he said, well, he didn't believe there really was one at that point in time. And I said, that's not good, knowing how things are further north. And he said to me, if you dairy convertible land, then you would want dairy across your land, wouldn't you? And I said, well, if I was short-sighted, maybe, but if I want my kids and their kids to enjoy our waterways, then no, I wouldn't. And he looked at me and said, you're a bit odd. And now look where we are. And thus, I give you odd fellows. You can join me. If we're odd, then that's cool. I don't mind being odd. Thank you.
Right. Thanks very much for that. Were you here when I talked about the National Stock Exclusion Regulations?
Yeah, so, I did hear that. That's really
were you aware of that?
I wasn't aware of it, but that's really concerning.
Yeah, so we just, yep. I guess like a lot of people in the country, we're waiting to see what comes out of central government in the next few weeks or months or so. I'll just see if we have any questions for you, Lloyd.
Just one really. You talked about testing on the way in and on the way out of your property. While that's basically an on-farm approach, how do you see the bigger picture? And I'm suggesting that maybe you stimulate on-farm testing because there's a subcatchment that is seen at different times to be not necessarily as good a health as it could be. So you're going up to actually find out where it is. So it's different between point source and non-point source. So Did you think about linking your actual numbers into a bigger view of that, understanding that subcatchment where you are?
Yeah, I mean, I guess where I really took it from, Lloyd, was actually over at Tapu Nui, and I don't know if you remember, it was on one of the morning programs, but they were doing testing, and there was a dairy farmer there, and he couldn't work out where the problem was, and it ended up that it was where he was putting the effluent on his paddock, it was going straight into an underrunner and out. And so we need to understand, if he hadn't have found that, like, he could deal with that issue straight away. So I don't totally get your question, though.
I'm just basically going back a level and saying, well, I understand on-farm testing.
Yeah.
To get more people involved in that, do you go to a subcatchment? Understand what's coming out of a subcatchment or a basin where you are, and then you work your way up and actually understand what's happening. In other words, what you can manage, you've actually got the microscope over. So
Yeah.
Is that a way of actually linking in more people?
Yeah, well, there's only five others in our thing. I don't know if it's said on there, but effectively we've got 7 Ks of really not intensive grazing onto us right down. So we haven't talked to the other guys, but I guess we just wanted to understand where we were at for ourselves, because we think we've been doing a lot of good things. We do give access to our cattle as well, to water, but it's not intensive, it's extensive. And the big thing that really concerns us, like, even though we're up in the hill country, our creeks are still relatively flat. The fall is not really steep, so your angles actually don't make much sense until we get up. Start going really steep.
That's all, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Have you had any involvement with the land sustainability team out of Environment Southland here in recent years?
No, not. We've only had officers call in, and we've just talked about, can we graze these areas? You know, and as long as it's not intensive, generally they're okay with it, because it's actually good for your red tussocks and all that to actually be grazed around. Yeah. But no, not massively.
Okay. Any other question? Would you say your property is a little bit unique in that it does have access to these biofilters and a whole range of sort of water purifying systems naturally that don't exist on other farms?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. There'll be a number though in that sort of headwater area that will probably have similar sorts of, and I guess it's how you graze it and how you manage it as well. Like, we don't force animals into those areas and chew them right out. So yes, it is, but I guess our concern is if we're putting one rule over everybody, it's totally unfair and unreasonable. And that's why I like the idea of having, you know, a one-on-one, you can actually talk about it and say, well, this is, yeah, it's sweet, you're good, good to go. It's common sense, like, we've been doing it for years. And we think, on our class of country, being able to put ponds at the bottom of a steep area is a good way to manage that, because we don't know when we're going to get an event. We don't know when we're going to get a heap of rain or a heap of snow. You know, to be fair, at dead flat paddocks, I've seen water run off them and they're dead flat just because of the event.
Okay, thank you. Rain.
So you can't control that, it's nature.
Yeah, just regarding the 7 ponds in those strategic places, I was just wondering to understand, how do you graze your winter crops above those areas? Do you still manage the feed face or think you run wires?
Yep.
You do?
Yep. So we came down, and then because the weather was so good the last 2 days, we let them in the creek at the bottom. But if we had had, for instance, we were coming down and we had a heap of rain, you would still get runoff, and it would go into your creek, which has got a heap of rushes and stuff on it, and then it would go down into the pond, and then it would have to go up through there. So it would still catch. And we just think it's no-brainer on our sort of country. It must be that you can fence it off. If you have it fenced off, no ponds, fenced off, yes, some of it will get caught, but the rest of it will go in and it's straight to the creek. So we think it's, yeah.
Do you feed baleage as well when you feed another crop?
Cattle will get baleage, so that's put out. We actually don't put it out like summertime. We'll wait till a frosty morning and then we'll put it out, because we've got to work out exactly what the weather's doing. We'll change plan if it's some paddocks will have a little bit of peat in. For instance, we're going across a bit of peat country now, so we waited, we didn't eat that when it was wet early on, and so we have to adjust that. So we just, we'll put it out for maybe 3 weeks ahead, but we'll just pick a frosty morning, get out there on the hard, and do that, and that's in racks.
Goes into racks?
Yeah. So it's just a rack, we just roll the rack over, so the tractor will go out and just put out 10 bales, 15 bales, whatever.
So in terms of the advantage of a rack, compared to just dropping the baleage on the paddock?
Well, it's wastage, isn't it?
It's more wastage rather than...
It's wastage, and it's simple. We just roll it, cut the wrap off and just roll the feeder on. And the way we work at face, so we just give the baleage every second day. So it's just the way, so it's not massive amounts of baleage. Sheep don't get any on crop, they just get crop.
I think what I'm trying to understand is there a benefit in terms of runoff or sediment from using a rack in those circumstances and dropping your baleage on the crop?
You mean actually feeding it out on the crop?
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily from runoff, or it's more about wastage. They just tramp it into the ground. I mean, water will run regardless. I actually do have issues with troughs, because you have a trough in the middle of the paddock and you get your cattle to walk there all winter. To be honest, that's way worse than them probably sticking their head in a creek, because you can actually control, you can just make them just get there, whereas a trough, they walk to the middle, and it's looking up to their bellies by the time you get through the winter. Mm. Yeah.
Understand that, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I had three questions. The main wetland, that's fenced off, is that right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so your stock don't get into there?
No.
And you've controlled the wilding trees, the silver birches and stuff in there, with the look of your photos, as was recommended in the thing?
We haven't really had to, but he did say he thought that the one willow and one gorse bush were a bit out of, but yeah. We actually haven't needed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's full of Scottish heather, so in February that's purple.
Oh,
right. And there's sphagnum moss in there as well.
Yeah. So you don't, we had a submission from people in your area too who use a similar wetland, I don't know if it's exactly the same, probably not, for fawning their deer, and they say it's really good for that.
Yeah.
And they say it doesn't cause too much harm. But your one is a bit different by the sounds. You wouldn't want stock in there because they wouldn't get a benefit and it would cause problems. Is that right?
Yeah, Dad used to let our stock in there, but he'd take the gum with them when they got bogged.
Right.
You can't get out to them to get them off. So, no, there's no, for sheep, well, sheep wouldn't go out there. Cattle will go if they're all hungry, need a bit of roughage. But we haven't, we're coming up close to 30 years. Right. So.
I wanted to ask, could you go back to one of the photos you had there of the stream that you said had moved from 2003 to 2013?
Mm-hmm.
I sort of looked at that and I thought that it didn't look quite right, or I didn't understand it.
Yeah,
so if I can stand up here.
Dark line.
So if you see the dark line,
that's the stream as it was.
Yeah, that's 2003, and then the white is to 2013. So in 10 years, that's how much it shifted naturally. I mean, if you look at that, the amount of soil that's gone into the creek is massive, and it's all naturally done.
Okay, are you sure that that's right though?
Well, it's off Google Maps.
Yeah, I know.
Look, we just traced it.
I don't think we need to pursue that, Morris. I think the point being made.
See how they're all...
The point is that the streams are moving, I think.
Yeah, that's the main point. And I guess for us it was about the maintenance of it. Because like so that one there, if we made the fence around that, we will have to get in there and control that. We'll just take that fence out.
Yeah.
And it'll, if you think 29 kilometres, nine of it's that heavier stream, so if you get, there's a lot of corners, doesn't run straight.
Yeah, okay.
So it's just a cost, I guess, what we're saying. It's a maintenance cost that will cost.
Yeah. The last thing was about the water sampling regime, and a number of people have talked to us about this and said it's a good idea. But the water sampling that's been done in a scientific way by, NIWA or something like that, show that most of the losses occur in a very short period of time, such as during a flood in the autumn, nitrogen Have you taken those sorts of things into account when you've been thinking about your water sampling regime, so that you do actually capture the whole range of losses that might occur over on an annual basis, or have you just taken samples when the river's been at a low flow, for example?
No, last time was actually, well, it was the 30th of May. We're going to do another one next week. So we're going to do them initially four times a year, and we're not going to manipulate the way that they are. We'll just take it where it comes in, where it goes out, and whatever flow is happening at the time, we'll just take note of that. Again, if it's flowing out that quick, if it's just happening in a flood, surely then it's gone, like it's gone. We can't actually control that. It's going to come down off the hill. You know, like when we have a foot of snow at home, and we get the thaw on there, there's water running this deep down the side of the road, and it's dirty as. Well, that's just stuff off the road. And that's going into there, into the dirty stream, and it goes. So it just flushes itself out. But how can, I mean, the other question is, how can you measure it if in a flood it drops in 2 metres of that dirty stuff there, which will have nitrogen and phosphate and nitrate and everything else in it, whether you got it fenced off or not, it's still going to go in. You can't actually control that.
Okay.
But we're hoping through the ponding and that, it might be 100%, but it's an attempt to do best practice.
Yeah. Okay, I understand what you're wanting to do there. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think hopefully it applies to a number of, like, that extensive, maybe basin type countries.
Any further questions? Okay, and no further questions from me. Thanks very much for coming in this afternoon and for preparing all the material for us. Right, we'll now adjourn for afternoon tea. Reconvene at 3:20.
Right.